Hello, and welcome to Radio Tacoma. I'm Louisa Beale. This podcast is one of several interviews on the subject of Standing Rock and the Dakota Access Pipeline. As of December 4th, the pipeline has been stopped for now. The Obama administration will not grant the final easement. But in the larger view, this is not over. I bring you these podcasts to introduce you to people who care. Sally Shaw traveled to Standing Rock in November. This interview was recorded on December 4th, 2016.
Hi, I'm here with Sally Shaw. Sally went to Standing Rock recently. I have a bunch of questions about that. So my first question is, when did you go?
I went the first week of November, and I left the day after the election.
Oh, my.
Yes.
My. So why did you go? I mean, besides just to get away from here.
Oh, it wasn't to get away from here. It was because I've been working on human rights issues for a long time. And most of them are overseas issues. Early on in my life, it was civil rights in this country. But since then, it's mostly been overseas, and here happening halfway across the country where I live, there was a call to have people come and support, and the situation was I was seeing human rights abuses online a lot, and so felt I should go. I could go. I'm retired. There was no reason why I shouldn't be there.
I almost stopped on my drive east last September, but I was on a timetable, and I knew that if I stopped, I probably would not leave.
Right. It's hard to leave. It's hard to leave.
Yeah. So what did you find there?
I found an extraordinary community. I stayed at what's called, if you were to look at it and just say it, it looks like Ossetti Sakowin, but it's pronounced by the folks there, I think, as Ochedi Shakowin or Shakowin, depending. And I stayed at that camp. People asked me how many. I have no idea. There might have been around 1,500 at the time.
Oh, my.
At one point while I was there, there had been a national call for clergy to come in support. And so at one point, 500 more people were around. 500 clergy came from all around the country. And actually, I believe from overseas as well. But stayed at a camp there.
So you took your own camping equipment?
Yes, we took sleeping bags and ground cloths and a tent and candles.
Good.
And
so you weren't expecting to be put up?
No, and that's something that's really important. If people are considering going, we are guests on their land, and we shouldn't be putting them out by having them have to provide for us. So people need to bring all of their own stuff to provide for themselves. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You should be leaving more there than you came with, rather than taking stuff away. Because there are people who are living there all the time who we're trying to help provide for, amongst other things. So bringing an extra 25-pound bag or two of rice or a 10-pound or whatever of sugar and mm-hmm. beans and whatever.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very good. So what did you do when you were there?
My time was mostly divvied up between two activities. One of them was helping sort donated clothing that was coming in by the truckload. Lots and lots and lots. And this was first week of November, so you're getting ready for a heavy-duty winter where wind chills take it down to minus 40. Oh. So we were pulling out the lightweight stuff. At first I heard that it was going to be stored, but there was too much. It wasn't being stored. It was being sent on to be donated elsewhere.
Oh, right.
And that continues to happen from what I understand. What they want now are heavy-duty winter stuff, period.
Mm-hmm.
So I was doing that a lot. sorting in all sorts of different ways. And then another thing that I was doing was I took on a project of deciding that when I got home I was going to raise money for teepee liners to help winterize the teepees, a bunch of teepees there.
Oh, yeah.
And so I realized that there were some community teepees. There's the school, and the school has two teepees. There's a midwife's teepee. There's a mental health teepee. There are all these teepees that are community-based. So I thought what I'd need to do was measure the diameter. That's how you figure out the size. And actually, I had no access to the internet, but I could text. So I texted to my sister for her to do some research for me, and then she texted it back. And so I found out what I needed to find out. And we went to a demonstration. I went to a number of demonstrations.
Yeah.
And when we were in Bismarck for a demonstration at the state capitol, we went and got a tape measure, because I was trying to measure the diameter of these teepees with a foot ruler from the school, and it needed to be more precise than I was comfortable with this foot ruler. Here, to measure those teepees, I could have done it in one afternoon, but there, it took several days. Things take longer there. You're walking around. Somebody might be in the teepee. Like in the mental health teepee, there was counseling going on twice when I went to try to do this. So actually what we ended up doing with that was we measured the circumference, on and on and on.
Yeah.
There are a little math from high school coming in handy. Pi was involved with that one.
Oh, yes.
Pi, not eating, but pi as in 3.14, blah, 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 blah.
Pi r squared.
Yes.
Or what did they say? No, pi r round, cornbread r squared.
So anyway, that's basically how I spent my time. I also would periodically, the only way to get access for even texting was to go up to the top of a hill. So walking up and down that hill took a little time, not a lot, but everything, you know, takes time. And then daylight was kind of short. It wasn't getting light till 7:30, quarter to 8. Now it might not be getting light till 8 or 8:15, for all I know.
Uh-huh.
Not as intense as Iceland, but, you know, it's winter.
It is.
And then when the sun goes down, you're done with that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like they've actually created a town. Because there wasn't a village there before, was there?
There wasn't. It was totally uninhabited, actually, Army Corps land. And the Army Corps has allowed them to be there. It's unceded treaty land that the Army Corps owns. It's very interesting, that phrase, unceded treaty land, because it is part of their land according to the Laramie Treaty, or the Treaty of Laramie of 1851. Mm-hmm. The Lakota, Nakota, Dakota lands were much bigger than they are now. It's kind of like my major focus for the last dozen years or so has been Israel-Palestine, and a lot of people are familiar with what we call the disappearing map, where in 1947 Palestine is huge, and then there's this encroachment. Mm-hmm. So now that it's like little reservations, well, the land of these folks, Ocheti Shakawin, by the way, means seven council fires, and that's seven different tribes that are related, that are from the Lakota, Nakota, Dakota people. So their lands have, starting with the discovery of gold, as far as I understand, I could be wrong there, but definitely the discovery of gold in the Black Hills was one of the huge chunks that was, oh, whoops, we gave you something valuable, we're going to take it back, or we gave you. The whole thing is just this settler colonial horrible situation that I theoretically knew is a continuing genocide. Mm-hmm. It's a continuing horrible situation for the indigenous people of this country. But I've become so much more aware of it. So much more aware of it. I saw YouTube the other day where a woman was talking about when she was arrested and taken to the Morton County Sheriff's Department, and they wanted her to undress in front of them, and she said no. So they dragged her into a room where several men and several women stripped her. I mean, it was a forcible disrobing with men there. I'm sorry. I didn't know that was legal.
Yeah.
And I've been in a federal prison, and I It was a horrific recounting of a trauma this woman just went through. And it's
right.
And it happened in Morton County, North Dakota, in Bismarck or Mandan. Yeah.
Yep. And people aren't aware. They're just...
A lot of people aren't aware. Even they don't know what Standing Rock is. I've been buying all sorts of winterizing supplies, and every time I do, they say, oh, you have these Christmas presents? And so I get to open up and tell them what it's for, and they don't know what it is. It's wonderful.
What's the response? Is it like a positive response?
Well, one woman helped me with all the stuff out to the car.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was very helpful. Others kind of just want to get on with their day. It varies.
So what else is happening over there?
While I was there with all the clergy from around the country having converged on Standing Rock, but a bunch of clergy came at the request of the camps to be in solidarity and have a day of prayer. And one of the things we did was go to Bismarck, which is the capital, because the road had been was blocked by the sheriff's department. We had to go the long way around, and what should have probably taken 45 minutes took over an hour. And we went to the governor's office at the Capitol. The idea was to go to the governor's office and try and get him to get the road opened. And it was a pretty extraordinary action because so many clergy had their garb on there, various stoles and robes. And what ended up happening was that something like 14 clergy went into the lobby and sat down and began praying. They couldn't get any further in the lobby. And they were arrested. Actually, before that happened, we all were in a circle. And I'm standing in the circle, and it was a large circle. There were maybe somewhere between 200 and 300 people there. And not everybody in the circle were clergy. The people who were there to support some people trying to get to see the governor. And we're all standing in a circle, and I'm looking around, and there's somebody I know from Philadelphia. And there's somebody I know from Vancouver, BC. And oh my goodness, there's that guy, what's his name, from upstate New York. And it was somewhat amazing. I worked in Christian ecumenical and interfaith work for 20 plus years for my job. I worked at Associated Ministries in Tacoma, and I worked at the National Council of Churches in New York. And then I've done a bunch of interfaith work with divestment from Israel stuff. And there are all these people. And there was also somebody from Seattle Jewish Voice for Peace. And we just sort of started seeing people and nodding and smiling. And at first the feeling was, what are you doing here? And then it was, of course.
Of course you're here.
So that was pretty amazing. Then people went inside. And this woman from Philadelphia, who I know, was one of the people who got arrested. She's a rabbinical student. Some people were taken as far as 4 hours away because all the jails are full in Mandan and Bismarck, so they have to go way far away. And doing that handcuffed in a... It's uncomfortable to say the least, but that was going on. Also, while I was there, a few days later, something controversial was called, and not everybody went, but several hundred people again went to Mandan this time. That's where the county jail is. Mandan is as close to Bismarck as Lakewood is to Tacoma.
Oh, wow.
That's where the county jail is, and we went there to circle the county jail, and it's also the police department, and it was a forgiveness march.
Oh.
The idea was that if you hold on to anger at these law enforcement people who have been treating people really badly, if you hold on to that, then you're no better than they are and their system. And it was the most, my reference point was Gandhi and King, a woman who spoke. It's online. If you go to Paulette Moore's Vimeo page, Moore, M-O-O-R-E, you can see part of a talk that was given there by this extraordinary woman who talked about, in her Lakota tradition, how if you don't forgive, you're not going to make progress.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's scientific basis of that because of, you know, when you don't forgive and you hold all these negative emotions, it releases stress hormones.
Yeah.
And that is detrimental to the body.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of the things she said was, if you can't forgive, then you pray that you can eventually forgive. Because some of this, it would be pretty hard to forget. You know, there's a time to forgive.
Yeah.
And it may not be immediate. You have to process it. If you forgive too soon, you're not getting to process it thoroughly.
And it's not true forgiveness either.
Probably. So that was extraordinary. It was beautiful.
It's amazing.
There was some beautiful singing that day, too. Beautiful singing.
Anything else? Any advice for what people can do?
Well, a lot of people are feeling drawn to going. And while I was there, I was involved in some conversations about people coming. And also, since I'm home, I've had conversations on some conference calls with people from around the country on lessons learned. And I want to say, and actually, apparently it's in writing, and I'm getting an email forwarded to me that is one of the indigenous groups asking that people not come if they're not going to stay 2 weeks or more. And then sort of saying, well, at least a full week. Don't come if you can't stay at least one full week.
So it's not this like, oh, let's just drop in and watch what's going on.
No. And it takes so much energy. It's a lot of work to winterize this camp. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of work. People are chopping wood. People are chopping vegetables. They're cooking. You bring enough food for yourself. And what we generally did was we fixed our own breakfast and lunch, and then we did some community dinner eating.
Mm-hmm.
Nice warm dinner in a community setting instead of standing up next to the car or that or truck.
Well, it sounds like the situation is changing daily.
Daily. The veterans are there right now.
Ah.
The veterans are there, and a road that's been blocked by the Morton County Sheriff, with the veterans having arrived, all of a sudden they've unblocked it, which is great, because it was because that road was blocked and the praying that was going on near the burned out cars that the Sheriff's Department had put there to block the that a lot of the violence has happened, them trying to keep the sheriffs trying to keep that road blocked. So that's now apparently, as of a few hours ago, heaven only knows, it changes so frequently.
Yes.
It was being unblocked. And I don't know how long that will last or if that's a good sign that it's going to stay unblocked.
Anything else? Any other observations that you want to explore? Or
well, I guess I want to just say, yes, definitely observations. And I mean, I've come back here with a better understanding. When there, we are guests. Somebody was talking about they need to create a comic where we have huge ears and little mouths. We need to be listening and watching and learning, not offering our ideas. We're there, as one friend said, to scoop the mud out of the canoes, which is something she was doing during an action. We're there to scoop the mud, to be a body, to help with what needs to be done, not to offer our ideas, which is really hard because you can see a process that isn't going well. But you've only been there a couple of days, and it's so hard to keep one's mouth shut. But it's a real lesson in humility. We need to learn more of that. We are colonial, and we don't need to go there and do more colonial crap on these people.
Oh, good observation. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I'm so aware of the concept of settler colonial projects, which is what the Israelis have done to the Palestinians. And I've heard it said in the last couple of years, there aren't that many settler colonial projects. Most of them are colonial. They go there just to rob the resources and to get cheap labor, but not to move in. But Israelis moved in, the Boers moved into South Africa, And the Puritans came here to stay,
yeah.
And those who followed, our ancestors, all, everybody who's listening this who does not have indigenous blood, mm-hmm. and I'm not talking about people who think they are a 16th or a 32nd Cherokee or Cheyenne or whatever. I'm talking about indigenous people. All of our people came here as part of a settler colonial project. That's really important for us to all take in and ponder and realize it's continuing. And so when going to Standing Rock, it's really vital to observe and to be of service. You're going there to be of service. You're not going there to check it out. As they say, this isn't Burning Man, this isn't Woodstock. Mm-hmm. It's a 24/7 prayer. The camp was started as a result of a lot of prayer of some youth, meaning 20-somethings for the most part, maybe 30-somethings, who had done a relay run to Washington, D.C. And when they got back to Standing Rock, they were doing a bunch of ceremony and praying, and the word they got out of that was that they would be successful if it were prayerful and peaceful. It had to be prayerful and peaceful. And so this whole thing is considered a prayer. They're at, therefore, and it's ceremony, even though it's daily life, it's prayer. And so they are asking the women to wear skirts all the time. I was wearing a heavy denim skirt over my jeans, and I had on long johns and all, but a skirt over it, which I discovered is an extra layer. It was helpful warmth-wise. So it's not like you're wearing a skirt and your legs are freezing. You're wearing everything, your jeans and everything mm-hmm. underneath, but it's considered respectful. Mm-hmm. And anybody who knows me knows that I question authority, perhaps to a fault. But I was totally inclined to do that because we're guests. It's their home. And in their home, we need to respect their wishes.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good way of putting it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's all very intense. I have come home pondering a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. Well, this touches so many things and levels and issues. I was just reading a quote from John Muir where you pull one thing and you realize all of a sudden everything's connected.
Yeah.
So speaking of connections, are there other groups that you're working with, or, you know, whether or not it's about this issue or about other issues? Because again, they're all related.
Well, I mentioned Jewish Voice for Peace earlier. One of the conference calls I was on was with people from Jewish Voice for Peace who have been to Standing Rock, and there were like 20-something people on the call from all over the country. And one of the women that I met at Standing Rock, who was this extraordinary trainer, we never talked enough to find out. I didn't know she was from Seattle. She didn't know I was from Pierce County. And turns out she's Jewish Voice for Peace.
Oh, my.
And I had no idea. Yeah. It's amazing. There's actually a Jews for Standing Rock Facebook page and all that. But outside of that, I discovered a number of groups while I was there that I want to look into more deeply. But these are folks who've been doing this good work for a long time. One of them is the Indigenous Environmental Network, and they are fighting pipelines all over the country.
Wow.
And maybe, and actually I think it could be an international Indigenous Environmental mm-hmm. Network. And that they're doing it all over the planet. One of the things I learned while I was there was not only is there the LNG plant locally here, which a lot of tribes, and that's a way, you know, maybe instead of going to Standing Rock, maybe people who are listening mm-hmm. to this might want to work with the Puyallups and the Muckleshoot and the other tribes that are finding significant problems with the proposed LNG plant in the tide flats. Then a person who I was camped with, some people hearing this might recognize the name Sarah Van Gelder. Sarah is one of the editors of Yes Magazine and one of their major writers. And I was camped with Sarah, and she was writing and blogging, and her partner Dee was doing the same, and I met a videographer whose name is Paulette Moore through them. We were all camped together.
Oh, wow. That's an incredible connection.
It's a great connection, and they're doing really good work with this. So you can go to yesmagazine.org and find out a lot of very up-to-date stuff, because they are right in touch. In terms of other indigenous groups, there's something called the Indigenous People's Power Project, IP3, Indigenous People's Power Project, and they're doing all the nonviolence training.
Oh.
And I've been through so much nonviolence training that I was curious, and it was great. It was really good. You might have heard online, they're sometimes training 3,000 people. I don't know how they do that. I mean, they're breaking up into groups of probably 150 or 200. And then those groups, when I was doing it, we broke up into groups of five and stuff like that. But it was good training. It was really good, up-to-date, kind of some of it sort of ruckus society good stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Last but not least, there's digital smoke signals.
Ooh.
I think the guy's name is Myron Dewey, who's one of the heads of it, or one of the facilitators of it, and he's a Paiute, I believe, and videographer. They're just connecting a lot of people. There's so much connecting.
Oh, and there's got to be more.
Yeah.
The last thing
I want to say is that if people want to donate, there are a lot. You hear about a lot of different camps. You hear about Red Warriors Camp, Sacred Stone Camp, Ochedi Shakowin. I urge you to donate to Ochedi Shakowin.
Mm-hmm.
From all that I hear, Sacred Stone and Red Warriors, they have a lot of funding sources already,
mm-hmm.
whereas Ochedi Shakowin are the Seven Council Fires elders, and those folks don't have the presence out there online that the others do. And so, and that is spelled OCETISAKOWIN camp.org.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much. This is incredible information. We'll continue to, you know, watch and support and learn and connect. Even though the easement for the Dakota Access Pipeline has been stopped, the struggle continues. We need to keep up the resistance until all the other pipelines, oil trains, and liquid natural gas terminals are no longer a part of our economy. We will continue to keep people educated about tribal lands, cultural history, and the dangers to our environment. We need to understand how all of this is connected to the economy, television, and our fingernails. Fingernails? Yes, fingernails. I will be tying all these things together in a separate podcast called Imaginal Cells and Saving the Earth. That podcast is available at radiotacoma.org. Thank you for listening. I'm Louisa Beale with Radio Tacoma.